book of Revelation. We finished the first 9 verses, and we wrapped everything up talking about there's still not this idea that we're looking at this in a way that, I mean, right now we're looking at the next 21 verses. I don't know if we'll get through it all tonight. It may go quick, it may not. Ultimately, though, verses 9 through 21, I kind of have to put all together. So I'm just going to read. It's going to be a lot of reading tonight, but it's going to be the rest of the chapter here before we jump into it again. But we're talking about this new Jerusalem. And we talked about the last time we came together of how that was going to look. And we started to see the beginnings of it coming down. And here's where we actually get the dimensions of, for lack of a better word, heaven for us. Because this new Jerusalem is heaven on earth. It is where men will live. It's the final place. Up to this point, the visions of the cities have given us really little reason to celebrate. So let's look at this, and then we'll continue with the conversation here. But it says, then one of the seven angels who had held the seven bowls filled with the seven last plagues came and spoke with me. Come, I will show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb. Then he carried me away in the spirit to a great high mountain and showed me the holy city, Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, arrayed with God's glory. Her radiance was like a precious jewel, like a jasper stone, clear as crystal. The city had a massive high wall with 12 gates. 12 angels were at the gates. The names of the 12 tribes of Israel's sons were inscribed on the gates. There were 3 gates on the east, 3 gates on the north, 3 gates on the south, and 3 gates on the west. The city wall had 12 foundations, and the 12 names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb were on the foundations. I almost wish that I had a board to draw this on for you. Because, but really think about the picture that this is painting. Because, I mean, and I know I just stopped in middle of this, but just thinking of the imagery of what we're looking at. Massively high walls, 12 gates, 12 foundation stones, each with names on them. The 12 tribes over the gates, the 12 stones are the disciples, the foundations. And then it says in verse 15, the one who spoke with me had a golden measuring rod to measure the city, its gates, and its wall. Now, when we start getting into the distances on this, just realize this would have taken a lot of time to measure. Just realize that. The city is laid out on a square. Its length and width are the same. He measured the city with the rod at 12,000 stadia. And we'll get into all this in a minute. But its length, width, and height are equal. So it's 12,000 stadia by 12,000 stadia by 12,000. It's a cube. So just keep that in mind. Then he measured its wall 144 cubits according to the human measurement, which the angel used. The building material of its wall was jasper, and the city was pure gold, clear as glass. The foundations of the city wall were adorned with every kind of jewel. The first foundation is jasper, the second sapphire, the third chalcedony. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that one correctly or not. But I think in different versions, that one's translated differently.
Agate.
The fourth emerald, the fifth sardonyx, the sixth carnelian, the seventh chrysolite, the eighth beryl, the ninth topaz, the tenth chrysoprase, the 11th jacinth, the 12th amethyst. The 12 gates were 12 pearls. Each individual gate was made of a single pearl. The main street of the city was pure gold. transparent as glass. I did not see a temple in it, because the Lord God, the Almighty, and the Lamb are its temple. The city does not need the sun or the moon to shine on it, because the glory of God illuminates it, and its lamp is the Lamb. The nations will walk by its light, and the kings of the earth will bring their glory into it. Its gates will never close by day, because it will never be night there. They will bring the glory and honor of the nations into it. Nothing unclean will ever enter it, nor anyone who does what is detestable or false, but only those written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Now, this is a very different but very beautiful picture. And as we look at this, as I said, up to this point, the visions of the city, of the cities that have been given, have left little to the imagination. It's been full on detail, and it's not really left anything to be excited about, you know? But if the readers identify with the holy city, they can expect to be threatened by worldly powers. Now, if we identify with this, then we can expect to have worldly powers coming against. And that takes us back to chapter 11. Now, in chapter 11, we did talk about a city. The first part of chapter 11. Then I was given a measuring rod like a rod with these words: go and measure the temple of God and the altar, and count those who worship there. But exclude the courtyard outside the temple. Don't measure it, because it is given to the nations, and they will trample the holy city for 42 months. I mean, this is the same. Like, John's given a measuring rod and told to go measure the temple, but told not to measure certain parts of it, because it would be trampled. So here, when we start to do that, and if you identify with the harlot city, then you can anticipate destruction. And that's in chapter 17. So you're talking about the temple. Now you're talking, you know, but each city that we've been talking about has been under desolation, desecration, whatever. Neither of those options seem very appealing. One, you're going to die. The other one, you're going to die. So it really doesn't matter which one. But this vision of the New Jerusalem almost changes this mindset. It changes this by showing readers that the holy city of the future will be a blessedness that is worth living for. Again, did God have to include this? No. Why would God include this in the vision? Because he wanted people to know that this was the tale of two cities, or three, so to speak. But the holy have a place to go. The elect, those that have lasted, those that have existed through the test of time, those that promised. This is what we were talking about before. You know, we talked about it at the last part of, or during the first eight verses of this chapter. That this is the city that is just now being detailed of what he saw in that vision that was coming down, that was saved for those who were redeemed. And so we can relate. Now, wording here is important, because at the end of verse 9, come, I will show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb. He doesn't say, I'll show you the city. He says, I will show you the bride. Now, this is the wedding day. This is the bride coming for her groom. Think about how beautiful this is. This is also where we can get into the conversation of, you know, well, the bride always looks her best on her wedding day. But the bride is also going to never look bad. Let's just be honest. From the sounds of things, it's going to be beautiful and it's going to stay that way. But we identify with the community of faith in the present, despite the challenges that are involved, because faith does have a future. And reality speaking, the faith that is there, the future that is there, all of those things that are there, faith has a future. We're given a future of faith in that we have the opportunity to see God at work in those moments. We have the opportunity to see what God is doing. We have the opportunity to see these promises from God that are allowing us to see into His future for His people. The bride is the community of the redeemed in glory. The city encompasses the entirety of God's people. Now, when we get into the details about size, then you'll understand a little better how big this city is. But ultimately, everyone is going to fit in this city. Can we get a true number of how many people? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, we've been told numbers throughout. But the bride of Revelation 21 bears the traits of the people of God for many periods. It covers all of God's people, from the 12 tribes, which were named earlier in Revelation, and certain ones were left out while others were included. Remember that as well. Right. Because of the way that they had lived. And then the disciples or the apostles will be the other 12. And my question is, okay, well, if that's the case, then is it Paul or is it Matthias? Because we know it's not Judas. So you got those questions too. But, you know, is Paul the 13th disciple or apostle? But, you know, was he God's choice, not Matthias? I mean, that's a question that gets raised in the church a lot, that if Paul was that, then maybe Matthias was just a space filler, or does it matter? No. We're told that there's 12 foundations. We're told that each of the foundations bears an apostle's name. We're told all the dimensions and the things that are there, but the 12 city gates bear the name of the 12 tribes of Israel, and its 12 foundations are named for the 12 apostles of the Lamb. The base of the city is perfectly square, and the wall is as high as it is long. All right. There you go. It's in your book too, huh? Each side of the city is measured at 12,000 stadia, about 1,400 miles, which is the distance from Dallas to Los Angeles. If that tells you anything. I mean, it's roughly what, 2,800 miles? No, 3,400 miles from New York to Los Angeles. But 1,400 miles. I put 3,000 miles on a rental car in September. I didn't reach driving around this city. I drove halfway around the city. That's how far this is. I mean, I only drove, well, you drove
a lot.
Yeah. But from here to Minneapolis, Minnesota, in a car, is not even 1,200 miles. So it was just shy of 1,200, I think, or maybe a little more. Maybe it was around 14. Maybe it was about the same distance. I don't know. I can't remember. I'd have to look it up. Either way, I've driven one side of this wall. I drove two sides of this wall and then around the corner and maybe made it a little way and it was like, I'm done. You know, but measuring it, that's what I mean by it would have taken a while to measure that with this rod. But it's as wide as it is tall. And it's a perfect cube. Now, you hear the King James, I believe, actually translates it as the city was four square, which ultimately means that it's a perfect cube. The walls are as high as they are tall or wide. It's kind of like chicken and chicken, high as they are tall. Yes, that's an exact statement. but it's a perfect cube. It is a perfect cube. Now, I don't think it has a top necessarily on it, but it might. I mean, it could be encompassed and closed. But you're talking about something that, okay, Dallas to Los Angeles. Well, then you're probably going Los Angeles to North Dakota. I mean,
from here to Los Angeles, it's 2,326 miles.
So we're 1,000 miles short. I mean, that is a large city. We think New York City is large. New York City houses about, what's the number? 7 million people, I think, live within the city. But any given day, you might find 14 to 25 million within the city. And it's cramped, but it's livable. It's movable. There's open space. I mean, you're not on top of people all the time. I mean, this is what we're looking at, is we know how big New York City is. We know how big Charlotte is. We know how big even Johnson City or Asheville. I mean, we can go small, and they seem larger to us. Boone seems kind of big at times compared to what we live in. But we're talking about something that's basically half the United States, an entire half of the United States in size. Because I don't know what the distance from Dallas to Minneapolis is, but I'm guessing that you're pretty much talking half the United States here. And that's the size of the city. And since each edge measures 12,000 stadia, the total length of the edges is 144,000. Right? Or cubits is what we read in there. But it's exactly the same number of the followers of the Lamb that we saw in chapter 14. 144,000. Something else here, though. Think about a cube. When you think about a cube, I'm not talking faces, I'm talking sides, edges. How many edges are there? No.
Eight.
There's four to a square.
Eight.
No. A cube. Four, four, and then four. 12.
Four, four, and oh, okay. 3, 4 is 12.
12. There's 12 edges to this city, to the gates, to the walls. There's 12 edges. Everything is 12. Everything is 144,000. Everything is with this number that we've known from the beginning of time. 12 tribes, 12 disciples. You know, it's constantly moving this way. If we take the dimensions literally, it would mean that the city would cover an area equivalent to the western half of the United States and stretch 1,400 miles up into space. The 1,400 mile tall wall.
Yeah, the vertical part.
Yeah. That's what John is seeing. The city is described as a walled structure made of stones. But in its essence, the city is a community of people whose pillars are the human beings who belong to God and the Lamb. The pillars, the foundations, are the apostles and their teachings. We are pillars of the church. We've talked about this before. Is it possible that these numbers, that this was a visual representation of God's people in some way, showing him how big and beautiful this was going to be? But this is the bride. He didn't introduce him to it as the city. He said, I will show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb. The Lamb supplies ample splendor for the community. Like, it's described as a walled structure. It's described as the Lamb supplying the ample splendor for the community. that is his bride, but the city of the redeemed is ornamented in gold and precious stones. And I read that, gold and precious stones. And I read what each one of those was. The foundation of the city wall were adorned with every kind of jewel. The first foundation is jasper, the second sapphire, the third agate. I remember that because I'm not trying to pronounce this word again. The fourth emerald, the fifth sardonyx, the sixth carnelian, the seventh chrysolite, the eighth beryl, the ninth topaz, the tenth chrysoprase, the 11th jacinth, and the 12th amethyst. And I'm sure that there might be other descriptions within each individual translation that we have. But the city is God's sanctuary. And here is God's glory. It's manifest in such a way that the people are drawn to it. And the limitations of the old order give way to the new life for all the redeemed in the presence of God. And here's what's interesting. The dimensions that are given to us here, this beauty that we're beholding, it's just, can we really imagine this? I mean, think about the words that John is using. Gold that is so clear that it's transparent. Streets of gold that are transparent. It's hard to imagine. I've never seen transparent gold, have you? Or is it that you can see in them a reflection that is so beautiful that there are no blemishes on the reflection? It looks just like you're looking at yourself in a mirror. I mean, that's the way we could... It's hard to think literally about what we're reading. It's also hard to think figuratively because the beauty is going to be so grand. Now, here's the funny part. I've lost somehow the next five verses of my notes, but I don't know that I really ever had any. Because here we're looking at this, and those next five verses, I don't think I can explain any better than they explain themselves. I did not see a temple, because the Lord God, the Almighty, and the Lamb are its temple. Do I need to explain that? God and Christ are the temple of this city. It doesn't need a place of worship because it is a place of worship. It is that final place for God's bride, for the bride. They are the temple. The city does not need the sun or the moon to shine. Well, good thing they were already destroyed. Because the glory of God illuminates it, and its lamp is the Lamb. Now, we've heard about the glory of God before because Moses, as Blake so graciously pointed out for us during Sunday school, is the translation that many give to that is that Moses saw God's hindquarters. But the reality is that he saw the glory of God. Moses went up on the mount to receive the Ten Commandments and came back glowing because he had been in the presence of God. God illuminates the city. The Lamb is the light, the lamp, the one who shines to light the city. The nations will walk by its light, and the kings of the earth will bring their glory into it. Its gates will never close by day because it will never be night. They will bring the glory and honor of the nations into it. They will come and they will worship. That's ultimately what's being said here. It's going to be beautiful and the nations will come. Nothing unclean will ever enter, nor anyone who does what is detestable or false, but only those written into the Lamb's Book of Life. Now, here is my question. Does heaven exist today? And we just can't see it. Is it a place that's attainable today?
Didn't talk about back being constructed. It's already built, and it just come down.
And you see why I'm asking these questions. Because here's the other question. The nations will walk by its light, and the kings of the earth will bring their glory into it. It seems like it's a place that exists and a place that people keep coming to. That not everybody's in the city, but it never sleeps. It doesn't close because there is no night. There's no night because the Lamb is the light. There's no sun and moon. There's nothing that has control over it because God is illuminating the city. But yet, no one will be allowed in that is detestable or false. Nothing can get in the city, but they don't need to close the gates. Those sound like beautiful gates too, because it's not, you know, we talk about pearly gates. Each gate is a pearl. A whole pearl. That's huge. Let's just be real. If you're talking about a gate that I would hate to see the oyster that pearl came from.
Is that the gate's 1,400 miles tall?
Yeah. Well, if the gate goes that high on the wall, we didn't get the measurements of the gates. But, yeah. I mean, we're talking about a big pearl covering a hole that never gets closed, probably because it's so heavy, and because it's always daytime. There's no need to close the city because it's never night. There's no reason to shut it off, not allow people to come in. But when we're talking about all of this stuff, this is just something to think about. Nothing unclean will ever enter it, nor anyone who does what is detestable or false, but only those written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Heaven is an attainable place after the judgment, where if your name has been found in the Book of Life, you come. And it is a beautiful place. And all John sees is that it comes down out of heaven. It's constructed. Now, does this come back to the conversation that we've heard many times over? I go to prepare a place for you, and then I'll return. Everybody talks about mansions. It talks about rooms. It talks about this. It talks about that. We're talking about 144 cubits, walls. We're talking about four of those. So you're talking about 144,000 square feet inside, or square miles inside of ground space. You're talking about so much.
Vertical space.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about airspace. I mean, 1,400 miles. Now, let's be real. 1,400 miles will stretch to space. No one can access it by air. The only way in is a gate that is guarded. And if your name's in the Book of Life. Think about that. You can't go over the wall. And Jesus has said that. Many will try other ways to enter. There is only one way. 12 gates, but one way. This is something that people don't think about, but we're given everything, and all of it lines up with Jesus' teachings. But yet we don't ever apply those to this part. But the only way in is, you know, I think the nations that it's talking about here are the nations inside. Are there going to be kings of the nations? Maybe. But they're going to walk by the light of God. Everyone is going to walk by the light of God. Everything that happens inside those walls is by the light of God. He illuminates it. There's no need for the sun. There's no need for the moon. There's no need for anything. God will be in control. He is going to be worshipped. Here's what's funny, and I'm going to knock these next five verses out. Honestly, I think we've only got this and maybe one more lesson in Revelation, and we're done. because these next five verses, I believe, are part of this story still. So the first five verses of chapter 22, I really do kind of want to look at, because I really want us to see what this ending is. So just bear with me. I don't think we'll go too long. But it says, then he showed me the river of life, the river of the water of life, clear as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb down the middle of the city's main street. The tree of life was on each side of the river, bearing 12 kinds of fruit, producing its fruit every month. The leaves of the tree are for healing the nations. There will no longer be any curse. The throne of God and the Lamb will be in the city, and his servants will worship him. They will see his face, and his name will be on their foreheads. Night will be no more. People will not need the light of a lamp or the light of the sun, because the Lord God will give them light, and they will reign forever and ever. This is almost cinematic, but this is the climatic part of the vision that John has got. He's now inside the city. He's seeing this. And it brings together God's promises to his chosen people and honestly his intentions for the world as a whole. This is a walled version of the Garden of Eden, but so much better. The descriptions we get here are similar to some of the descriptions that we see in Genesis. The city encompasses a garden like the one that he prepared for mankind. For within the city flows the river of life. Flows from where? The throne of God. Together with the tree of life that was in the Garden of Eden. The tree of life that was there for them to take from and not die. The tree of life that was giving, that would have given them life. Genesis tells us how the ancestors of all mankind disobeyed God so that the earth was cursed because of their sin, and they were driven away from the tree of life to work and die. They couldn't eat from the tree of life because they were driven out of the Garden of Eden. But this says the tree of life is on both sides of the street, which is the river. So you've got this river as clear as crystal. The street, which is gold, but Main Street is the river of life that flows from the throne of God. And Revelation holds out the hope that in the city of God, nothing will be cursed any longer, and people will taste of the tree of life. He intended for man to eat from the tree of life. It's unclear whether they actually ever did, because they didn't eat from that tree. They ate from the tree of good and evil. We know that. Did they eat from the tree of life? Possibly. Did they know how sweet it was? Absolutely, I'm sure. But if you don't like fruit, you better like fruit, because that's heaven. They don't need to work because the tree of life will give them fruit continually. It will bear fruit 12 months out of the year. Not only that, it will bear 12 different kinds of fruit. Now, that's kind of impressive. Those who gather around the throne will see the face of God. There's a promise there. They will see the face of God and reign with him forever in the glory of his everlasting light. And this is the very final reversal of Genesis. This is man being allowed back in to where the tree of life is. Man was kicked out because of sin. The fact that the tree of life is now available to man again is the proof that the existence of sin is no more. It's the proof that this is a city that has no sin, no nature of that. God's light, his purity, his power threaten the darkness of human sin, uncleanliness, and mortal weaknesses. Remember what Jesus said, that he who refuses to come out of the darkness is condemned already. Remember that I want to be in the light as he is in the light. But then you talk about it says the light shines into the darkness. And the darkness didn't receive it because man wanted to stay in the darkness. Because light exposes flaws. Light exposes sin. Well, if there's no need for a lamp, no need for the sun, no need for any light source because God is the light, well, guess what can't exist in that light?
Sin.
Exactly. So just as the sun's blazing rays can destroy the eyesight of those who look at it, God's burning holiness can destroy those who come directly into his presence. Remember in Exodus when he tells Moses that, you can't see my face. But if you go to this cleft in the rock, I will hide you and I will let you see my glory, is what he told Moses. But here we're told we will see the face of God. There's something to that, that we as who we are right now cannot see. Getting us back to the questions I was asking as we came out of chapter 21. Is it a place that we just can't see right now? Is it a place where we are no longer on a timeline and we're coming and being allowed in when the time's right? Therefore, here what we're seeing is that the law of Israel stipulated that the high priest with the Lord's name inscribed on the turban that crossed his forehead was to come into the presence of God under a protective cloud of incense to make atonement for the people. In New Jerusalem, those barriers are gone. It's like what I talked about this morning, like what Paul was saying in Ephesians chapter 2, that you are now welcomed into that inner place, the inner holy of holies, the place where God resides is where you are welcomed into. Ultimately, what we're talking about is that this is the biggest temple ever. And this is the Holy of Holies. This 12,000 stadia city is the Holy of Holies because it's where God's presence is. And all are welcome. Not one, not two, not the high priest and only the high priest. Why do I say that? Because it says what? That they will see the face of God and his name will be on their foreheads. That is what the high priest had. He had on a turban or whatever. It would say God, like Yahweh, on the turban. And they had to enter under a protective cloud of incense because they were entering the presence of God. You will be entering the presence of God. The barriers of sin and mortality are removed by the grace of God, and the redeemed find themselves again able to see God face to face. I believe Adam and Eve saw God face to face. Why do I believe that? Because he came down to walk with them. He spent time with them. When he found them in their sinful state, they wouldn't look at him. And we can't look on God as sinners. It'll kill you. That's what he told Moses. Instead of hiding from God's face, they turn toward God's face, for the privilege of seeing God's face, of being God's people, is extended to the nations. The privilege of serving as a high priest is extended as well because of the name on the forehead. And all worshipers are now allowed to bear that name and to be that high priest because sin no longer is there. There's no need for a scapegoat. There's no need for division. There's no need for special office to be held. The promise that the righteous might one day see the Lord comes to fulfillment in the city of God. The bride will see the groom. And the night of sin and death is gone. The light of God's salvation and light is here. That's it. That's the story. Now, yes, there's another part that we will look at the next time as we wrap down coming out of this whole book, and it may even take a couple times, but we've still got a few verses left in chapter 22. But is it not, I couldn't do New Jerusalem any differently than just do it all at once, because I knew this is the promise we've been waiting for. This is past the sin, past the struggle, past all the different hardships and heartaches that we face on earth. It is the place that is for us. If we don't talk about it, if it's left out, we don't get the hope out of the book that we're supposed to get. there's a tale of two cities, Babylon and the New Jerusalem, or the Old Jerusalem becoming the New Jerusalem, whatever it is. But you're going to die for your faith unless it's in the New Jerusalem, where you will live forever with him because of your faith. But your faith plays a major part in this. Ultimately, what it all comes down to is we may face every trial that we can face on this earth. We may struggle through every little detail that we can face on this earth. The problem is that what we need to understand is that nothing unclean will ever enter it, nor anyone who does what is detestable or false, but only those written in the Lamb's Book of Life. But I mean, just think of how beautiful this city is. That's why I said I almost wish I had something to draw on, but I don't know that I could give it any justice. I've seen pictures. There are people with artists, the best artists in the world, have tried to take them and do what they can. And you might be able to find some on the internet somewhere by searching for artwork. It's still not going to be as beautiful as the city will be. But we're talking about walls that are too high to cross, because they're just as high as they are long. I mean, we're talking about a city that is gorgeous. And within that city, the presence of God resides. And nations are there. And kings all are bowing down to him. And it's just something that is beautiful. I mean, listen to these five verses one more time, and then we'll close out. He showed me the river of the water of life, clear as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb, down the middle of the city's main street. The tree of life was on each side of the river, bearing 12 kinds of fruit, producing its fruit every month. The leaves of the tree are for healing the nations, and there will no longer be any curse. The throne of God and of the Lamb will be in the city, and his servants will worship him. They will see his face, and his name will be on their foreheads. Night will be no more. People will not need the light of a lamp, nor the light of the sun, because the Lord God will give them the light, and they will reign forever and ever. They, not he, they. God isn't about reigning over people. He's about reigning with the people. God has always and always will be about being with his creation. You don't believe me? Go back to the Garden of Eden and read what God did and why he created man. Man was created to experience the Garden of Eden with God. But God can't be in the presence of sin. That's why man was thrown out of the Garden of Eden. It had nothing to do, with that God didn't want to be in the presence of man. He didn't want to be in the presence of sin. And the story from that day forward has been about bringing man back to God. Well, sin's difficult to overcome. If by man's timeline you can't figure that out, seeing that we're still, what, 6,000-7,000 years into this, and he still hasn't overcome it yet. Not that he can't. He could speak it into existence. But he wants man to choose him. He wants man to be faced with that invitation I talked about this morning. And that invitation goes out, and some will reject it, but some will accept it. And he wants to be with man forever. With man, not over man. Not condemning man, not telling man what to do, not controlling man. He wants to reign with man, because man will have that opportunity to live and reign forever with God in the city, where there is no night, where there is no pain, where there is no suffering. The leaves are for healing the nations. There is no war. There's peace on earth. Goodwill toward men. Right? All those things we talk about at Christmas. But when we wrap this up, we're basically, the next section of this is just the close of this letter that John has written, this vision that John has written. And it's really more or less of him being shown, as we look at it, it's more or less the Son of Man talking to him. The angel, and then he will tell a story, and give us almost a summary of what will take place, and then he tells him how to handle the book. He tells him how to send it out and how to share it and how to do it. He even speaks himself, says, "I, John, am one who heard and saw these things." But the last few verses of this, it says, "I, Jesus, have sent my angel to attest to these things to you." It's like a bibliography almost. It's like, here are my sources. These are all the sources, and they're speaking to man, and Christ is speaking here too. So we'll look at that the next time we're together on this, and we will wrap it down and finish it up. And it's hard to believe that we've come almost to the end of it now, but we are. But just take it for what you see in it, and realize that we have that promise of beauty in our future. If we just stand firm, if we just stand strong, if we just stand firmly on the Word of God.